I'm Jill Shaw, and you're listening to Last Night at School Committee. Ross Wilson and I are here to summarize for you what happened last night during the Boston Public Schools School Committee meeting. Ross, good morning.
Good morning, Jill. So, Jill, last night there was only one scheduled report, which was on summer learning. This is a second meeting in a row where we didn't expect much of an agenda, but there are a few important things to note here, Jill. First, the meeting started with the superintendent's report, where the superintendent mentioned the long-term facilities plan. And the superintendent said that BPS will bring an update on May 22nd, and there will be an announcement of initial mergers, closures, and reconfigurations.
We are continuing our conversations with school leaders, school communities, and our central office teams to map out some initial mergers, closures, and reconfigurations as an early step towards delivering on the long-term facilities plan.
Which is
super interesting.
Super interesting.
Did we know that? Because that sort of surprised me, but excited me at the same time.
We were guessing that something would happen this spring.
Yeah, we were guessing.
The guess is true. So in a few weeks, we'll hear about this announcement.
So the superintendent also discussed the school year 24-25 demand report, which is used to show the number of families that chose a particular school in their list of top choices.
This is really important data.
And we'll link to it in the show notes. She didn't share it per se. She just said it exists and provided information on where folks could go and get it.
Exactly. Now, so Jill, this data, while it doesn't show everything, so it doesn't necessarily show what families chose each school first, second, or third, but it does show families that chose a school in the top three of one, two, or three choices. I think it's really important data, Jill, that Mr. Cadet Hernandez has been pushing for a number of months now, particularly around this issue of school closures and mergers. And he's been saying, basically, if a school is in the bottom 5% or the bottom 1% of all schools across the state and has been that way for a number of years, and families are not choosing that school, why are we not closing the school if nobody wants to go there?
Because the practice for the school district is if you don't put it in your top three, but your top three choices are full, then you just will get placed somewhere.
That's right.
And Mr. Cadet Hernandez's point has been, well, let's just take like some guidance from the fact that very few people are picking particular schools, and maybe we target those as the first ones that we close or merge or use for a different reason.
If you look in the spreadsheet under the K-2, so this is our kindergarten seats that you know many families enter the district in K-1 or K-2. In kindergarten, there are about 2/3 of our schools do not have a wait list. So there's more capacity than there are students who have chosen to go to the school. There are many schools like the Dever. The Dever has 60 seats available for K-2, and only 11 families, Jill, are choosing the Dever as one of their top three choices. Again, 11 families are choosing the Dever as one of their top three choices. There's 60 seats open, and the Dever is one of our worst performing schools and has consistently been so for years.
So to your point, member Cadet Hernandez says this.
If there are schools that people are dying to go to, do you grow the school? And schools that people are not dying to go to, what do you do with it? So I hope that can be part of the conversation, but also how we're thinking about what's coming in terms of the broader infrastructure for the system.
So Jill, we should expect to hear more about this, hopefully, in the coming weeks, particularly on this May 22nd meeting. The superintendent then gave a brief update on exam schools.
I just want to remind the committee members and the public that we've had 5 different versions of admissions criteria in the last 5 years. My team is continuing to analyze additional data to better understand the impact of this year's policy change, and we'll share that at a later date.
So let's go straight to public comment here for a second. This is a community member who's been following exam schools closely for several years and from an analytical standpoint. She mentions that the community has been crowdsourcing results of this year's admissions data behind the scenes. So in essence, while the district is not ready, or said last night, they're not ready to really report out much on the exam school admissions data yet, this person offered a summary which included this note about the difference in the baseline requirements for an applicant from Tier 8 versus applicants from lower tiers. Don't forget that the tiers are based on socioeconomic characteristics per the U.S. Census tracts and data from the American Community Survey.
An applicant in Tier 8 needed a 96.5 for any exam school seat. That is an alarming contrast to Tiers 1 through 5, where applicants with scores in the 60s and 70s were admitted.
this isn't to say that kids in lower tiers don't get higher scores in some cases, but it does imply that there is a shift happening in terms of who is now attending exam schools.
And to that point, the chair makes this statement.
It is heartbreaking year after year to see kids who have the qualifications and the desire to go to a school or schools that they cannot go to when we have other schools that we know are struggling. And the goal is to move all of our students into high-performing seats and to keep those students who have the skill set and the desire to be here and to improve all seats. So just hoping that that really becomes our long-term strategy.
And the superintendent adds this to the mix as a number of school committee members kind of all sort of congealed around the chair's sentiments.
The one piece of data I would just ask committee to mull on, like until the 22nd, is that across the exam schools, the combined service of special education students is 4%, and the combined service is 4% for multilingual learners. That is well below the district average. So again, if we were to expand additional exam seats, we further dilute and concentrate special education and MLE students into the other high schools.
So, you know, there's a bunch of things said here that really should be a part of the conversation. It seems like every year, school committee and the district have really wanted to make changes at the elementary school level, understanding that those changes, if all kids were kept on grade level moving through the district, many more would have the opportunity to be applicants to this meritocracy that was the exam schools. At this point, we've had 5 years of something that's different than what historically was three exam schools where you tested in. There were very strict requirements and a certain number of kids got in. Now there's been 5 years of different admission standards, and the pool of kids who go to the exam schools looks different from many different lenses than it did 6, 7, 8 years ago. And so the question is, and this is kind of posed by members last night as well, should the exam schools just be expanded? About a right. third of kids in the seventh grade apply to the exam schools. Why shouldn't a third of kids get in? They're all demanding a high quality education. Those three brands represent in the district a high quality education. And why don't we use that, right, to then lift up opportunity for all other kids?
Sure. And Jill, particularly as we just discussed with demand data, and again, we encourage our listeners to look at that demand data at the high school level. And we'll see a number of our high schools actually have way more seats than families are choosing to go to those high schools. And this is what the school committee has said through their policy, that if a student has a B or higher, or even if a student is proficient on MCAS, that they should be able to go to an exam school and be successful.
Right. Right?
That's been shown in their data analysis. And so I think what we should be doing here is saying every student who has a B or higher or is showing proficiency in MCAS, they should have an opportunity to go to one of these admissions-based schools.
Yes, I think it's great that it's an admission-based school. It looks different than
sure.
the meritocracy that was built to send kids from Boston to Harvard. It looks different. It's changed over time. It's really changed over the past 5 years. Lots of families have been forced to opt out of the district. They've moved to other places. Metco is full. Private schools, parochial schools, full. Many more applications out. Even this year, the results didn't come out in time for people who had to commit to a private school and spend money. Even if they got in, they probably didn't go because they couldn't get their money back. So just by the nature of all of these different shifts in admissions, the exam schools have shifted in terms of makeup. What I didn't love was the superintendent saying, well, hey, if we follow suit and, you know, keep growing the exam schools, then what are we going to do with kids in our system who are special education students and multilingual learners? The conversation be, okay, let's use this as a mechanism. We understand the paradigm has shifted. Let's use this as a mechanism to have higher expectations for all of our students. And let's figure out, what does our school district look like? How many buildings do we need for the other two thirds to integrate them all and offer all of them a higher quality education? I mean, it probably means lots more kids in summer school. It means there's a lot more remediation that has to happen because we know that kids are going to be entering the district's high schools 2 or 3 years behind grade level. Then let's just acknowledge those things and aim for the stars, as opposed to continuing to be mired in like these updates about transformational schools that are at the bottom 5% in terms of performance in the state.
So Jill, all of that, yes. A quarter of students who applied to exam schools did not get in this year.
Right.
And we also see that a lot of those families are not choosing other high schools. They're probably going to leave the district.
Other public high schools.
And we should really try to figure out
yeah.
how not only to keep all of those kids in the district by providing different offerings that are following what they want, but also, to your point, we think all of these high schools that are not serving kids well, all of our schools should be comprehensive and have all the offerings of these exam schools.
Right.
It is time to reimagine our high schools. Now, Jill, I got to say, though.
Well, and I don't know, do they want to keep losing kids? I mean, because the thing is, this doesn't shake out until the seventh grade, right? So you have a much wider and more diverse pool of kids entering in kindergarten and first grade. It's become like this big shakeout in seventh grade where lots of families just choose to leave the district because they throw up their hands and don't know what to do about the exam schools anymore.
So I think one thing that's happened over the last few years is with all of the additional funding from the federal government, it's masked the problem of enrollment decline.
Yeah.
And so BPS has not had to recognize that enrollment is important. And they will now in the future. And this will be a topic in the next few years. Mm. It's not this year. Again, our budget is very, you know, it keeps on increasing and is very healthy using federal funds. Yeah. Those federal funds are going away. And now the district will have to face what is driving the budget, which is enrollment.
Right.
And if you don't have enrollment, you have to close schools. And so, yes, I mean, to your point.
They're also acknowledging.
Slowly.
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 Yeah.
So I just want to say one other thing about this topic, Jill.
Yeah.
And wow, I got to say, BPS actually came out the data faster than we expected. So they did come out right after this meeting with some data, not all the data, but some data
yeah.
to show that these cutoff scores, by the way, at the upper tiers are very, very high, quite high. But in our discussion on this today, Jill, as we were talking about the school committee meeting, we were rehashing all of the things, right? The right sizing of tiers or the points going to kids and all the policy recommendations and a lot of them from Mr. Cadet Hernandez, who was saying, why don't the points just go to the kids? That will
right.
solve this problem.
Right.
And I was feeling, Jill, kind of exhausted by this issue, right?
Yeah.
To get back into it again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, geez, this is, and we were talking about high schools and the need to reimagine high schools and so on. And I'll just say, Jill, we didn't hear much from members last night on this issue. We didn't hear much from members around the passion of wanting to see more data or the passion of questioning this policy or the way it's developed. And I'm going to predict here, Jill, this may be the last time this year that we see the data on exam schools. I imagine the superintendent and her team will not mention the data anymore. I think they will move on and the story will be about school closures and mergers and other issues.
You know what, though?
We're not going to hear about it.
I agree. Okay. We probably won't hear about it. I think it's the right prediction. But here's one other thing you're making me think about is it kind of is time to move to a lottery.
Let's do one more change
in exam school admissions and just move to a lottery. The actions that have been taken thus far have changed the makeup of those schools. We see it in the MCAS scores. But there's this very high expectation around those brands. We know kids deliver on high expectations.
That's right.
So you've got brands, you've got high expectations. Why don't you hang your hat as a whole district on that?
Move
to a lottery
and
then serve all kids well to adhere. Like the city could then demand that the whole district be held to the expectations of those three schools.
Sure. And you could actually have more than three schools.
Yeah, well, exactly. You'd have to expand it, right?
Sure.
Because you've got a lot more kids than can fit in those three schools. But it's not about the buildings. It wasn't about putting different kids in the same buildings. It's about the makeup and the expectations in those schools. And so, you know, I kind of think you're right. This will probably be the last time we hear about the issue. But the school committee does have a huge opportunity here to leverage those brands and those high expectations and do whatever they need to do to help all kids meet those expectations. The school committee then moved on to the only report of the evening, which was an update on summer learning, which was incredibly long. And there are a lot of chiefs in the kitchen.
When you say there's a lot of chiefs in the kitchen, I think there may have been... I didn't know there was a lot of chiefs, meaning literally
yeah.
they call themselves chiefs of this and a chief of that and a chief of that. And I think there's maybe seven of them who are working on a team to create summer learning. Yeah. A lot of chiefs.
So, and there's a lot going on this summer, which is very exciting. Here's some key takeaways. It sounds like the summer program is primarily funded this year by the ESSER budget. One of the school committee members asked exactly how much ESSER funding was included in this year's budget. No one knew exactly.
They think the majority of the summer program is
probably a lot.
Right.
So they're going to get that information. But this obviously has implications for next year's budget, I think is the point. They are committed to taking care of kids from sunup to sundown. So that's amazing. I wonder if it includes toothbrushing. And more pools are going to be open again. So this is exciting.
Let's talk about pools for a second, Jill, because, okay, so we heard from Deputy Superintendent Sam DePina. And he said, it sounds like the district is now taking responsibility for the 13 BCYF pools that are around the city. I think it may have always
been the district's
responsibility, but I think the district has figured out that it's their responsibility for opening these pools. And he notes, as we'll play, that this may be the reason why only three of them were open last year, but we'll get into that. And the city, remarkably, there's two pools that are under construction of the 13. They're going to get fixed with $25 million per pool, Jill. So, I mean, I'm wondering if this comes with like infinity edges and dedicated cabanas for the pool users. We'll see. Here's Dr. DePina.
Our previous MOU with the Boston Centers for Youth and Families, they were our pool operators and managers. And over the last year and a half, that's changed. And we've had to take on a lot of those responsibilities and learn how to do that as well. And that's been a transition that we've been working on with the BCYF as well as city colleagues. And last year, if you recall, in summer 2023, four of our 13 pools were operable. That was because of this coordination, the funding, the repairs, things that need to be done. We just needed to put better focus and attention on it. So over the last year and a half, we've done that. And this summer, we're happy to report that of our 13 pools, eight of our 13 pools will be open. Two of the 13 need large capital repair. Those two are the Blackstone and the Holland school. And this for this year's FY25 capital budget, the city has committed $25 million to each of those schools for us to get going on those repairs upcoming. The remaining three pools can be operated once the vicinity is complete. There's construction going on at those schools. So in short, 11 of the 13 pools are able to be open as of 2024. If not for the neighboring construction that's going on with those schools.
And then lastly, but maybe most importantly, and it sounds like the superintendent and her team are on this, at least three members last night mentioned that it's incredibly difficult to sign up for summer school because there's a bunch of pages where you need to get through putting information in about yourself and your child before you can even see what the opportunities are.
Yeah, I mean, Jill, on this note, I mean, I've done this as a parent a number of times. It's a different login system than your student information system. It's School Mint. You literally have to put in like emergency contact information to set up an account and a new username and password. And literally, you have to go school by school to look at all the different programming. It is an unnecessary impediment to signing up for summer.
It's actually the software that they built, and that's how the thing is set up.
It's been this way. Yeah. I mean, and last night, members at the meeting were going on saying, wait a minute, this is crazy. Maybe a chief, we should have a chief of user experience that could figure that out. So Jill, in summary, last night we heard from a superintendent report, we heard about summer learning, but there are many things that weren't discussed, including digging into this demand data and really the upcoming facilities plan that we'll hear on May 22nd. Jill, I think we should expect more robust meetings in the coming months.
And that's what happened last night at the Boston Public Schools School Committee meeting.
We want to hear from you. If you have thoughts or concerns about how BPS is serving your student, please send us an email at podcast@shahfoundation.org. That's shahfoundation.org.
Thank you for listening to last night's school committee. We hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. And if you did, please rate, review, like, and share it with your fellow friends, parents, and residents of Boston. We all have a stake in the future success of Boston students. Have a great day.